Good morning. I'm grateful for this opportunity to speak with you this morning, though I noticed my name is not in the order of worship, so I thought maybe I would get out of it the last minute. But my name is Beverly Lapp, and it became clear to me in recent days that I'm not in the habit of writing sermons. I create a lot of meeting agendas and write many emails and reports. I know how to prepare a piece of piano music. But how does one prepare a sermon? How much time should it take to write a sermon? How far ahead should one work? How do you actually do this craft that is preaching? Maybe I should know this as someone who works at a seminary that trains pastors and leaders. I thought I had a pretty good idea of what I would work with in the Psalm and Matthew texts we just heard. But a few days ago, I read some Bible commentaries in the AMBS library. I was soon filled with regret. Now I knew too much, and I could not simply make up my own meaning of the text. But here we are. Let's begin. With the call of the disciples from Matthew 4 in mind, I was asked to share about my recent experience being called away from what was familiar to me to something new and unexpected. I was a music professor at Goshen College for 23 years until about 18 months ago. Now I am academic dean at Anabaptist Mennonite Biblical Seminary in Elkhart. Before this transition happened, I took a big risk. I let go of my faculty position at Goshen College, which had by then reached tenure and full professor status. I did this before I knew what I was going to do next. It was a job I loved with people I loved at a place with a mission I deeply believe in. I grew up professionally at the college, and among many constants, there were the students, the wonderful music majors and others who filled the practice rooms and performance halls with music. There were students you just had a feeling about, that they were meant to pursue this art and to prepare to share their musical gifts with others. I remember this one student, Brody Thomas from Western Pennsylvania. Brody was one of those students the music faculty had this feeling about. Now he teaches my daughter and leads the choir here today. But I digress, as I do. I won't go into the reasons why I gave up my job as a music professor. I'm not sure I fully understand those yet. But that part of my story leads me to one of several contradictory ideas that will be part of this message. Paradoxes, if you will. Paradox number one. It is true that I felt called towards something different and had conviction at the time that this is what I needed to do. To give up my job before I knew what I was going to do next. But what I want to say to my own children and other young people present today is also true. You should not do what I did. Please do not do what I did. I mean it. I'll say a little more about this later when we look at the Matthew text and the call of the disciples. But first, let's look at Psalm 27, which challenges us to trust in the moment of fear. I did not always do this well in my time of uncertainty, but I was helped by the wisdom and care of a lot of good people and by summoning faith in God. At a very core and raw level, I knew God was with me. Through this journey, I was deeply grateful for the mystery of belief, for the comfort of faith, and for the belonging I have in a church community. In her commentary, Psalm scholar Ellen Chatty situates Psalm 27 as the third part of the protagonist's faith journey. First, in Psalm 25, there is a remorseful plea for forgiveness and rescue. Then, in Psalm 26, the psalmist claims relocation and restoration with God. In our reading today, Psalm 27, we learn of reconstruction of the psalmist's life. This reconstruction leads the psalmist to confidence, sustained by comfort that God will save them. Remorse and relocation are earlier steps that make reconstruction possible for the psalmist. Ellen Chatty proposes that Psalm 27 is expressing the psychological safety we long for, while urging us to trust in moments of fear. As the psalm calls out, "The Lord is my light and salvation. Whom shall I fear? In the time of trouble, the Lord will keep me safe in his dwelling." Wait a minute. There's a song for this. What is it? The Lord is my light and my salvation. What book is that in? I think it's Sing the Journey, yeah. We have to sing this. We have to. And we need piano. Jeannie, are you here? Can you play? Someone toss me a songbook. So let's find it here. I know it's 97. You should find the green book in front of you, I think. Let's stand if you are able and sing together. Paradox number two. It's true, we should be obedient. It's also true that small acts of rebellion are sometimes necessary. I think J.R. Burkholder would agree with that. When we sing or say these words of courage, we are laying a foundation that will sustain us in times of fear. Psalm 27 that we just sang proclaims reconstruction after remorse and relocation. When I decided to give up my position at the college, I felt plenty of doubt and a sense of impending loss. It was a time of relocating who I was. Who was I without Goshen College? This was the place that when I arrived as a college frosh in 1987, made me feel more at home and more inspired than I knew was possible. When I began college, I was thinking of being a high school English teacher, but my music professors kept saying, "You belong in music." When I declared a music education major with a goal of directing high school choirs, my piano professor said, "Why would you want to do that? You need to focus on piano performance and piano teaching." I'm glad that the music faculty at Goshen College today say, "That is fantastic," rather than, "Why would you want to do that?" when someone says they want to be a music educator. But I'm also grateful for what my piano professor saw in me, because I was indeed falling in love with the piano, evidenced by the hours I spent in a practice room each day. I could not get enough of it. During my recent time of fear and uncertainty, I learned that I needed a vision for life that was more than one place, more than one gift. I needed to relocate myself. I feel no less passionate about Goshen College or about music today. But having started teaching there at the age of 25, I felt called to more expansive thinking about who I was and in what kind of work I belonged for the next phase. This is paradox number three. It is a gift to be swept up into passion for our vocation and to lose ourselves in the study or practice of a discipline, to have a vision for what we want to do and the kind of place we want to do this work within. It is also true that we need some nimbleness, some flexibility for what we will do in life. We are all more than one primary discipline, than one vocation, than one place of work. In Matthew 4, 12 through 16, the setting is Galilee of the Gentiles. Scholar David Turner says that the geographic and ethnic elements of this location are significant for Matthew's theology. Galilee was looked down upon by the enlightened Jerusalem establishment and those who supported it, with its population of mixed Jews and Gentiles, writes Turner. Emphasizing that Jesus brings light to Galilee, a place in the shadows of society, is how Matthew foreshadows Jesus' expansive and inclusive call for all nations. As we know in this story, Jesus is walking alongside the Sea of Galilee and comes across two brothers, Peter and Andrew. In his gospel, Matthew makes a point of saying that they were fishermen for their trade, not fishing for a hobby. Jesus says, "Come, follow me, and I will send you out to fish for people." They left their nets immediately and followed him. Later, they came upon another pair of brothers, James and John, who were casting a net with their father. James and John also immediately left their boats and followed Jesus. I am unsettled by this text, and it leads me to paradox number four. I want to affirm the analysis of the commentaries, which is that God's call demands a decisive break from business as usual. This is an inspiring idea to me. But the immediate and sacrificial obedience of these pairs of brothers, this is alarming. Why did they not ask more questions, make some conditions? And how could they just leave like that? Did they not have family concerns to take care of? David Turner notes that disciples in later call stories of the gospel are more hesitant. Their faith is not yet strong enough, and they need more time before responding. I'm comforted by this because it helps us consider that for Peter and Andrew, James and John to be so ready, there was foundational work that was done to prepare them for the clarity they felt in that moment. That other disciples needed more time suggests that there is more than one way and more than one timeline to respond to God's call. In my time of uncertainty, I found myself assuming that my next place of work, if it was not at Goshen College, would be less Mennonite. I also fantasized about working at an organization with vast financial resources. What would that be like, I wondered. When the call came to consider applying for the dean's position at AMBS, I recoiled. I had long admired AMBS, but I felt unqualified to be an academic leader at a theological school and biblical seminary. I also resisted the idea of going even deeper and wider into the church. Paradox number 5. Inner resistance may be God's voice telling us to trust our intuition. But inner resistance may also be a sign that we need to stop and listen, to not only trust our initial reactions. Others saw that AMBS could make sense for me, so I listened to this. I learned more about AMBS. I thought about past experiences that may have prepared me to, in unexpected ways, to be a seminary dean. I thought about how I've always wanted to understand the connections, the very real and deep connections between music and theology better, and that AMBS could be a place where I could delve into this. I wrestled also with how much harm the church and its institutions, including AMBS, have been part of. I recognized increasing cynicism in my heart and head about Christianity, compounded by the co-opting of faith that has happened in our politics. I learned how Bible scholars, theologians, and peace studies professors at AMBS are reconstructing and reclaiming faith, a faith rooted in a radical movement of the 16th century Protestant Reformation. Anabaptism was remarkably, astonishingly ahead of its time in calling for separation of church and state. I began to wonder if leaning more into this tradition was what I was being called towards. Paradox 6. Christianity has been vastly distorted in the past, and this distortion continues today in heartbreaking ways. But in our belief, do we have any other option but to join the work of reclaiming the gospel message? I want to take a moment to reflect on the privilege that comes with my call, that came with my call. Even in my fear and uncertainty, I had security. I knew my family and I would be okay, one way or another, with more opportunities and resources than we deserve in our non-equitable society. My privilege was rooted in my age. I was young enough to make a viable professional shift. It's rooted in my whiteness and my Mennonite connections. It's rooted in my citizenship in a land that was never mine nor my ancestors to begin with. What is the role of privilege when it comes to taking risks? When it comes to the expectations we put on each other for risk-taking and following God's call? We each bring complex stories to how we receive call and make decisions. Who were Peter and Andrew? Who were James and John that they were so ready to leave their fishing nets? What privileges did they have? What might be the valid reasons that others stay with their ordinary lives? Paradox 7. We live by faith, sustained with the bold and countercultural claim that we shall have no fear. But the gospel message also demands justice for the poor and peace for the oppressed. We do not simply rest in confidence. Our faith requires us to respond to the call of Jesus, who challenges our delay and our ambivalence. There is a beautiful hymn, "Thou, O Christ, My Lord and King," by Charles Tinley, African-American Methodist minister. Tinley was born to a free mother and slave father. He moved from Maryland to Philadelphia at the age of 10 after the Civil War ended. Without access to public education, he learned Hebrew in a Jewish synagogue in Philadelphia and Greek at Boston Theological School through a correspondence program. He became a pastor, activist, and gospel music writer. His hymn, "Thou, O Christ, My Lord and King," is number 35 in Sing the Story, the Purple Book. Go ahead and take a look at it. Number 35. It's an example of how our words repeated over and over again. There's wonderful repetition in this hymn text. Words prepare us to respond to God's call. In this hymn, we invite Jesus to be all thou art in us. We invite God to work God's mighty work in us. We invite Jesus to keep our heart from day to day and to let his joy abound in us. As we sing, we might even find a few paradoxes within the text. Thank you for hearing part of my story today and for sustaining my faith with what I know to be one of the most powerful ways I am strengthened, that I do the foundational work I need to do to be ready to respond to God's call. This is in singing with my faith community. Sorry, not sorry, Glenn. History will have to wait, as we already know, for another day where we have no congregational singing. But I ask you now to sing verses 1, 2, 5, and 6 with me. Sasha, would you play an E flat for me? Thank you.